he wasn't that good.
No, because he got the MVP, finals MVP before he was made ever the All-Star.
Right, exactly.
Right, that, I mean, I guess that's one thing. It's lower. I guess I didn't.
I mean, he was really, really good. He was a really, really good role player.
You just called Joe
Dumars
a role player.
He was a role
Michael
player.
Jordan would tighten up his sneakers when he played Joe Dumars because he knew he had a challenge.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, rap attack, Mr. Magic.
Hello!
Matthew, introduce yourself, please.
My name is Matt, and this is the Sean Kemp Redemption Podcast.
And we're with John.
Hey, what's up?
Not much. All right, so Matthew hasn't been watching a lot of basketball lately, so can you get him caught up on...
So, Friday night, I was playing bridge. What were you doing Friday night, John?
I was getting fucked up at home watching the Oklahoma City... and Minnesota game.
How many overtimes?
Double overtime.
How many points? Miller.
Oh, God. For love. One, 50, I believe 53 and 16.
Was it better than Durant's game of 50? Kevin Love's.
So Durant had 50 in the same game.
No.
No. But they did once again go off for 40-40 with Durant and Westbrook.
Yeah.
Which is
carrying that team pretty hard for the regular season, just the two of them right now.
Which is ridiculous because earlier this year they had the 50-40 and triple double game for
right,
which was the first 40-40 tandem game since MJ and Pip.
That would have been my guess. Pacers. Who would have done it
against the Pacers, which I remember seeing. Actually, I watched that game on a Sunday triple header.
NBA on NBC triple header.
I watched that game and I shit my pants back then. And the Oklahoma City Thunder are making me shit my pants yet again.
Was this game played in Oklahoma City?
Yes, Oklahoma City.
This is a real credit to the Timberwolves that they.
Credit to the Timberwolves. Credit to Kevin Love. How unstoppable he is. Best power forward right now, hands down. Triple teamed all game.
So he's better than Blake Griffin?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Blake Griffin had a real coach?
No, because Kevin Love hit a clutch three to send it into double overtime. Or overtime.
They're all clutch threes in overtime.
All clutch threes. Unstoppable from all over the court. Dominated... the Oklahoma City front line.
Is he better than LaMarcus Aldridge right now, Matthew?
Okay, don't mock me. LaMarcus Aldridge is an all-star. Granted, Kevin Love has probably surpassed LaMarcus Aldridge this year.
We have a game later about your ridiculous infatuation for players, but there wasn't a lot of LaMarcus Aldridge news in this week, so...
I saw LaMarcus Aldridge in person.
What'd he say to you?
He didn't talk to me, but I saw him in person.
Oh,
Standing outside the window of his house?
No, I saw him at the United Center in a basketball game.
He was playing basketball.
Oh, yeah.
He's really good at basketball.
It's true.
Speaking of
Blake Griffin, what's his name? The dude down on New Orleans?
Jason Smith? Something? Some big white guy.
Yeah.
Knocked over
Blake Griffin. And how long will he be suspended for?
2 games.
I agree. And
he was suspended for 2 games.
Oh, they already announced it? All right.
Well, I actually saw that headline.
My question is, I missed this the other night because I've been actually avoiding the Bulls a little bit with Derrick Rose being hurt because it stresses me out a lot.
Not that fun to watch either.
Well, yeah, it's just been rough. It's still going fine. And seeing Luol Deng hobbled, running around, gives me a
corner. He played, I don't mean to get into this tangent, but I'm going to just very briefly get into this tangent. I didn't see last night's game. I listened to the end of it on the radio. Luol Deng, hobbling around, as you pointed out, played 48 minutes last night.
Yeah.
Against a home game against the Toronto Raptors. He played 48 minutes last night.
Yeah.
Is Tibbs running them into the ground
in
order to get his back-to-back Coach of the Year
award? I don't think he has a shot at that award this year.
Oh, yes, he does.
No, Pacers coach, whatever that guy.
No, they're falling. They're falling.
Indiana's falling.
All the well-teamed front-runner coaches.
How many votes is Vinny going to get this year for Coach of the Year?
Well, his mom's. I don't know.
Vinny's mom has really turned.
No, Doug Collins.
Vinny's lost his family.
Sixers have fallen. Right. Sixers Doug have Collins fallen. Will. Pacers have fallen.
Collins
all
has
the
won an award before,
surprise
right?
teams that Matt Blake loves, who are full of.
Rubio doesn't get injured. Rick Adelman wins this award going away.
I think that's possible, actually. I don't know.
If there... they get to six.
All right. Well, Tibbs sure. is in the discussion, but
Tibbs is a leader.
There's never been a back-to-back coach runner. Of the year.
Front runner. How badly is this going to ruin the Bulls' longevity?
I don't know. I hope Dino's Tibbs, better than me because he's the coach of the Bulls.
Ego obsessed approach to winning coach of the year. He said coach of the year was more important than winning a championship.
I don't think he said that, Matthew.
I don't know. I think they. I just. I mean, this is like the obvious point that any Bulls fan would give, but they just play Luol Deng too much, and it hurt them last year against Miami, and it's going to hurt them this year against Miami. Why does he play 48 minutes? Why don't they give just a few more minutes?
Because he's an all-star.
Ronnie Brewer or Jimmy Butler. Obviously, like it hurts them during that specific game when they give a few more minutes to Brewer or Butler, but like.
And the long-term rewards far outweigh.
Well, maybe that's what they're doing with Derek right now. And mm-hmm. even though the reports are that he can't walk and he's running in pools and shit like that, and that they grossly misdiagnosed his massive groin tear with internal bleeding.
Ooh, yeah.
Massive groin tear with internal bleeding. Wow.
Yeah. Maybe they know they got to lean on somebody for a little bit. Because if they dropped out of that two seed, they will
they
have.
Can't lean on
they
his
could
groin
lose.
Right now.
I think Rose might be out for the first round of the playoffs. And.
What?
I think
he's walking again.
Tear?
I don't know.
He was. They said that he might play yesterday.
They say so many things. They said that a month ago.
Yeah, they did say that a month ago.
The last report I heard is he's not day to day. He's week to week. So
the Bulls' starting backcourt has really been victims of groin injuries this
but,
year.
But, yes, with my not watching the Bulls as much, I miss Joakim Noah throwing a ball to referee.
Yeah, I also missed...
I mean, it wasn't as bad as Rondo's, right?
I did not see that.
Well, I was hoping someone could enlighten us.
So
Matthew,
you might want to cut that out of this podcast.
None of us.
I think that'll just...
None of us have seen
it. If anybody wants to call in and describe it to us...
I am, picturing in my head a frustrated Joakim Noah... throwing a ball at a referee. Does the ball hit off the referee's side of his head?
I think it was more of like a toss, like in the direction that was just kind of mean. And it, I mean, it wasn't Rondo.
So it was in the
and
referee's direction.
Rondo got
direction.
Two games.
It didn't hit the referee. The ball didn't hit the referee.
I mean, I'm sure he touched it afterwards, regardless, because he's a referee.
Sure, but the ball did not hit the referee.
There was no referee injury report that I've seen. I think everybody's okay, other than
how
most
is the
referee's
groin?
Not good.
Very supple.
Smoking the Escobano, guzzle my second bottle. Hope I don't catch a homo. Grossing that net simultaneously, making me climb higher. Heinous crimes behind me. Search for can't find me. Fuck sadness. Had this been you having this lavish habitual happiness at me, you wouldn't look back. Which you would have sex on condominium roof decks. So anyone move next? I hit you with two texts. Rock the Roberto Cavalli, no shoulder convertible. Mozzie, my Colombiana, mommy riding beside me. Every tap means something. That's my word on my body. I have to lean something with that. My niggas is ignorant. Put lead in your pigment. Just cause y'all was mad at all the years I was getting it. In 9-7-6, no. 9-8.
If Joakim Noah took off his glasses and let his hair down right after throwing the ball, would he transform into some the hottest supermodel? Or...
He already is. What do you mean?
Vinny Del Negro, there was a headline on ESPN on Friday, Del Negro losing the Clippers?
When did he ever have them?
And ooh, when did he
ever
have
Jerry Maguire, them? I don't know.
Vinny Del Negro was a terrible, terrible coach of the Chicago Bulls. Chicago Bulls went 41-41. They fired Del Negro. They hired Tom Thibodeau. A year later, with the only significant personnel addition being Carlos Boozer, the Bulls go from 41-41 to 62-20. Vinny Del Negro was always confused. when he was playing with the Bulls, and he liked Kirk Heinrich too much, and his players didn't respect him.
And wouldn't play Derrick Rose in the fourth quarter, and when Derrick Rose was asked, "What kind of plays are you running?" he responded, "We don't really have plays."
Well, yeah, he... Del Negro shows the same flaws that he showed in Chicago. His rotation...
Had never coached at any level.
That he'd never coached at any level. He runs the same pick and roll at the top of the... in the middle of the floor, every play, all the time. No off-the-ball movement. Shitty rotations. Inconsistent rotations. To the point that you'll often wonder what is the best player on the team.
Like he'll play a point guard for 35 minutes one night, and the next night not play him at all?
Often you'll wonder why is the best player on the team on the bench in the fourth quarter.
Because
happens all the time. Happened all the time with Derrick Rose.
Yep.
Happens all the time with Blake Griffin. Happens all the time with Chris Paul. Blake will go minutes without ever touching the ball on offense.
What are the odds that Vinny Del Negro is gambling against himself in every basketball game ever?
Well, then he'd lower his chances of winning. Why would the stakes be even higher? Like, he'd have to win first. And then throw games.
That's true.
To make more money.
Well, you think that, but I think everybody thought the Clippers were a lock for at least the top three seed in the conference this year, which they're quickly
of people point to Vinny Del Negro's vast inexperience, his low basketball IQ, and his facial gestures as, like, his weakest points. But I really think that his weakest points are sort of what you're saying, just, like, the misjudgment of talent on his own team, like, the fact that, you know, when he was coaching the Bulls, he would play players like Aaron Gray and Larry Hughes for long stretches.
And still managed to upset veterans on the team.
Yeah, it was almost like he would almost forget that he had, you know, Derrick Rose or Ben Gordon or Luol Deng on the bench. Luol Deng, I mean, his performance, you know, he seemed really hurt by Del Negro. I mean, his career seemed, you know, on the decline when Del Negro was there.
Maybe if Vinny just played Luol Deng 48 minutes a game, it's all would worked out.
Yeah.
Well, he would never have touched the ball. That's the thing. He would never have touched the ball. It's like,
well, when you don't run offenses.
Two players will touch the ball, and that's it. No off-the-ball movement, no plays.
Yeah, Vinny Del Negro sucks.
And, well, the thing is, I think his greatest talent is being a great interview and always beating Randy Whitman out for a job.
Why? That's a good point.
He beats out Randy Whitman for the Bulls. Two front runners for the Bulls coaching position. Beats out Randy Whitman yet again for the Clippers.
We should have Randy Whitman on this podcast. That guy must be... What is he doing right now?
He's coaching the Raptors, I think.
He's coaching the Raptors? Really?
Yeah. He finally got a good interview. Not against Vinny Del Negro.
Was this Randy Whitman's first NBA head coaching job?
I believe... Oh, no. Timberwolves.
Okay.
Was he a full-time or an interim coach there?
Both.
Okay.
Better NBA career, Vinny Del Negro or Randy Whitman?
Del Negro.
Yeah, it's not even close.
Hands down, Del Negro. If I had his basketball card and knew who he was, then he's a better player.
Good point. Alright, John. You were not here when we played this game last week, but this is going to... I've hidden the basketball card. I've frozen it, like David Stern froze the envelope. And I'm going to read some facts. I'm going to see if you can guess who this player is. Frozen, so I know who it is.
Is it Matthew,
can you announce this game because you named it terribly?
This game is the... I forget what I announced this game as, but it's the...
Something about remembrances? Memories?
Memories of memories past! NBA edition!
Remembering the NBA during its heyday. NBA memories.
That was the worst jingle.
It was worse last week. All right, so this player... Career points per game, 14.2.
Can I participate?
Yeah, we're both. Career number of steals, 894. Most points per game in a single year, 21.9.
Wait a second.
Gary Payton.
No, it's not Gary Payton.
When he had the 21.9 points per game, it was in the years of 1981 through 1982. He attended college where he played the vast majority of his professional career. He's 6'5". He was also born in the same state where he played his professional career. He was drafted 29th in the second round. He was born in 1956. This card is of his... I guess they wouldn't have the future things on here from when he played. But in this card, which is a 1990 Fleer, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Stadium club or no?
No, just crap. He averaged 8.4 points and he played 48 games and had 5 blocks.
In 1990, these were his 1990 stats.
That's his 89-90 stats.
And so in 81-82, he averaged 21.9 points.
He did. 78-79 was his rookie year.
Right.
And he played 82 games, averaged 16.1.
In his rookie year as a 29th overall pick?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mark Eaton.
I mean, unless they didn't list everything on this. It's not Mark Eaton. He is too easy.
You're way off.
Okay.
I thought you would get this. You better.
Don't give me any more hints.
Give me more hints.
Give John more hints.
Don't look at me. Hold on. This is an NBA hoops card, actually.
Oh, that means nothing.
That's correct. On this card, he's playing on the Atlanta Hawks.
I know who this is.
Doc Rivers?
I know who this is. It's not Doc Rivers.
Before this, he was traded mid-season.
You're giving me too much information. I already got this.
Oh, then guess.
That air of you
then
thinking.
Guess.
I just... No, this is...
His middle name is Eddie.
This is going to be high drama when there's silence and I correct.
No, that's fucking dead air, dude. That's why, like, shit's sometimes boring to listen to.
Fine.
He was traded to the team that originally drafted him in the year previous from the Indiana Pacers, where he had played 2.5 seasons.
Mark Jackson?
Nope. Before that, he had played 8 years with the same team.
Wait, he started with the Pacers and then he got traded to a new team?
No, he started with the team that I described, where he also went to college and was born.
Oh,
Career field goal percentage, 46.9.
Oh, thanks.
Free throw, 86.1. This NBA Hoops did not have averages for rebounds and assists, it merely lists totals. But he was a starter on a team...
John Long.
Yes! Yes, Matthew!
Wow.
John Eddie Long!
Ugh.
Number 34!
Oh, God.
I was not familiar with John Long before I picked this card out.
I am unfamiliar with John Eddie Long.
It was fascinating. Matthew, I thought you would jump right on John Long. Can you, do you have any John Long anecdotes for us? Or is this the one that you have now?
John Long,
How many rings did John Long have, Matthew?
Zero.
Correct.
Let me fill in some of the blanks.
He was born in Romulus, Michigan.
Yeah.
John Long was born in Romulus, Michigan. He attended the University of Detroit, where he played for Dick Vitale. And then he played for Dick Vitale, the Detroit Pistons.
Oh, yes. Baby.
And John Long, when things were lean in Detroit, John Long scored a lot of points. When things got good in Detroit, he was replaced by Joe Dumars and Vinnie Johnson.
Who were better players than John Long? Did he make it past the Hawks? Was this the end of the John
I'm glad you
Long
asked.
Career?
the John Logue era did not end in 1990.
It continued.
It continued for one more year, because I remember... So, okay, this is... this. Some critics might call what I'm about to say kind of obscure, but...
Oh, really?
in 1990-91, the Pistons were back-to-back NBA champions. Isaiah Thomas had some major injury during that season. I forget what it was. I think he broke his shoulder. But anyway, Isaiah Thomas was out for a long time. And during this time, the Chicago Bulls actually... went way ahead of Detroit in the standings. But anyway, so the 90-91 season, while Isaiah Thomas was injured, the Pistons signed John Long to a series of 10-day contracts, ended up signing him for the season. And John Long played significant minutes while Isaiah Thomas was injured that year.
And John Shin, what is John Long doing right now?
Dude, he's wondering where it all went wrong.
I think a lot went right for John Long. I was pretty impressed by that, those stat lines. It's like, God, John Long, I hardly knew you.
Yeah.
John Long, 13 years in the NBA.
Sit at the NBA. I'm live. What you mean somebody should sit? They looking at it too. What you think, they're not monitoring it? I'm a free agent. I don't play in the NBA. You missing it.
Meant to talk about Marbury. So, Chris, can you give the background?
Stephen Marbury,
legend.
Shoe mogul, legend.
Entrepreneur.
Should have his number retired.
Playground legend.
Everywhere he played.
$10 shoes.
Traded for Jason Kidd's straight up ones.
The greatest all-star in Chinese basketball in the finals of Chinese basketball.
Isaiah
was
Campbell.
Annihilated. Taken out. By a Chinese player.
I'm not even talking about that.
Oh my god, well then we have more Marbury news.
Before the finals started, when he won the game to go to the finals, broke down and cried a la MJ.
Oh my goodness.
This is the farthest he's ever gotten in a tournament in his career. And he's going to probably win.
Well, they took game one.
The point I
wanna... sent you that foul. Did you not see
that? Yeah, no, I saw the foul.
Oh, that was nuts. And the guy...
What they didn't show before was the guy fell down. He was getting up off the ground and ran at Marbury. So they didn't show what happened before the play. I'm thinking Marbury pushed him off, and that was a retaliation.
I see.
But Marbury, after they won the conference game to go to the finals, broke down and cried a la MJ.
Wow.
And... I bring this up because is this Marbury's is this the apex of his personal journey in his career? He is finally winning on his own terms, living the cocksure life of the pariah he had become in the U.S. Goes to China. Gets to be the man. Gets to put up 50 whenever he feels like it. Gets to lead his team to the finals. Is finally winning on his own terms. And obviously...
this is the apex so far. And this is his fourth apex.
I predict
a minimum of two more apexes coming for Marbury. I mean...
Legend of the Chinese League.
If there were zombie apocalypse and Marbury came up and was like, follow me, I would immediately follow him.
Stephen Marbury peaked in 1998, his second year with the Timberwolves. They almost beat Seattle in the playoffs that year. After that year, people are saying, Marbury and Garnett, they're going to be unstoppable for years and years. And then Marbury demands a trade the next year.
I would say he peaked in game one of the... playoffs.
Yes.
With Stoudemire's rookie year.
Yes.
And
no,
he
that's
hits
a
running
yeah.
three pointer to win the game over Tony Parker against the Spurs.
That's a good
That
answer.
Game was the shit.
For one year, that year that you're describing, Marbury redeemed himself fleetingly.
I would say his peak was when he was with the Knicks and he did the interview where he was so visibly stoned. That he could not even make sense. And the person interviewing him tried to be like, Stephen, you're not making sense. He's like, no, man. I am. And the shoes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so he's winning on his own terms. That's the point that I want to make.
Do you think if he wrote a memoir, it would be called Winning on My Own Terms?
Oh, absolutely.
I bet he's already written three.
Yeah, three, and had to make adjustments and changes, and, you know.
My favorite was going to buy his shoes at the, do you remember what store they were sold at?
Sarah Payless.
No. It was, no? Rick and Barry's.
Oh. Stephen Barry.
Stephen Barry's. Stephen Barry. No more Rick Barry. Fuck. Stephen Barry's, which sells essentially discount shitty clothes. They had a Sarah Jessica Parker jean line, I think. Mm-hmm. But Stephon Marbury.
But their whole thing was is that they were made, they were either American made or at least not made with sweatshop labor.
Correct.
And so, actually, The Nation magazine on their website, circa, like, 2007, ran segments applauding Stephon Marbury as, like, a role model.
Oh, it was. It was because his shoes cost between $10 and $12. They were star-name basketball shoes. Yeah. It was his idea, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he got stoned, and he has lots of good ideas.
Right.
To have a shoe where people wouldn't get killed over it, an affordable shoe. And
certainly no one has killed anybody over Stephon Marbury.
I don't know.
I have a prediction. Because these are such iconic shoes, I went to Stephen Barry's to buy some after they were going out of business and they discontinued this. I went to the suburbs because I had had a few pairs. They were fine shoes. You could wear through them in like six months to a year of like heavy walking and stuff. But they were shoes. And some of them didn't look totally stupid. Some of them looked really stupid. But I went to the Stephen Barry's that was semi-going out of business that had two people working there, and it was just a pile of boxes of shoes. I couldn't even find... I literally looked through every one trying to find one matching shoe. I asked for help, and they just looked at me funny. So I only got like two pairs, which I wore through. My prediction. Starberries in 20 years. Those shoes are going to be worth some money. $1,000 a pair. I should have bought
maybe
them all. I mean, if I had all
maybe
the Starbursts right now.
Exactly. Where they should have been made. It's going to be reversed. It's going to, like, you know, people are going to be like, what? These weren't made locally.
These weren't locally made.
I don't know.
This was made with union labor.
Terrible. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so if you guys ever want to get a lot of Starberries, bring them to China, change the label to say Made in China instead of Made in America, and start selling them, it would be a very profitable trip. Matthew, this new segment is for you, and it's called, how much does Matthew, how infatuated are you with a basketball player? That's not a good name. You can come up with a better one later.
How infatuated is he?
And this week, we have not LaMarcus Aldridge.
I am not infatuated with
LaMarcus.
I don't
have Miller. Matthew Blake, your favorite everything ever, your favorite human. So, John, here's the game.
My favorite human.
Matthew, here's what you're doing today. You are starting a franchise with Reggie Miller at his peak. What year would you describe as his peak season?
Well, he had such a long and prolific
career.
One season.
I mean,
and give us
he
the numbers.
Never really peaked that well.
Highest points per game.
His highest points per game ever happened actually in his third season in 1990.
Okay. Do you want to choose the 90 season for your Reggie Miller season?
I would choose the year he did that 9 points in 8 seconds.
That's what I would also choose.
Or the year they went to the finals.
Let's split the difference. I choose the 94 season, the year before that, when he gets the 25 points in the fourth quarter.
Oh, that was pretty
good. All right, John. So here is our job. We have to name players that Matthew Blake would rather start a franchise with, or play one year
current?
With. Anything ever.
Oh, come on.
And Matt gets Reggie Miller's
that's
peak.
That's not fair.
And if Matt
that's
says
stupid.
He would rather have that player, we lose. I will start. Matthew, Would you rather have Reggie Miller at his peak or Dennis Rodman at his peak?
I know, that's actually a very good question.
I was going to start hard, but who would you take?
That is a very good question.
I don't want to lose this right away.
They're both,
so you better say Reggie Miller.
They're both specialists. I would say Reggie Miller, I think.
But it's close.
It's admittedly very close, but I would say Reggie Miller.
John, you want to make sure he's still going to choose Reggie
Miller. Both specialists.
But it needs to be as ridiculous as possible. I would choose Dennis Rodman over Reggie Miller.
I mean,
all the time.
I just think Reggie Miller has a good personality and a good sense of the dramatic.
Oh, for the clubhouse.
Okay.
The clutch. Okay,
I will pick a player, also Hall of Famer, but has the exact opposite heart and mind of Reggie Miller.
Oh.
Karl Malone.
Oh, Jesus Christ! Wow. I mean, I would have to take Karl Malone, personally.
Really? I hate him so much,
I would
take Reggie Miller.
Oh,
we're talking about one of my favorite players from my childhood against Karl Malone is one of my least favorite players. And, I mean, obviously, by any objective measure, you win more games with Karl Malone, especially if it's in the regular season.
But you're still taking Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller
this
over Karl
This is my
Malone.
Team. I'm the owner of the team. Look,
need someone to pass the ball to in the last minute, which you can't give Karl Malone the ball.
Carmelone,
you have to take him out of the game.
Karl Malone is the better player. But hey, this is my team. I want a certain identity. I want skinny, ugly players that talk a lot of trash. Reggie Miller, I have to pick over Karl Malone.
That was an excellent choice, John.
I just aesthetically can't deal with Karl Malone, especially the way he plays.
All right, Matthew, are you ready?
Okay.
Allen Iverson.
Oh, come on.
Reggie or Allen Iverson?
Both of these players...
Are divisive.
I think, obviously, again, by any objective measure, Allen Iverson had a far better career. He was MVP one year. He led his team to the NBA Finals.
Who are you
year.
Selecting, Matthew? It's your team.
I have to take Reggie.
Oh, God.
Oh.
I'm an Iverson. Go higher than that, John.
What city are you in?
Oh.
Because...
I assumed I was in a small Midwestern town.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, is that your ideal city
to be
a GM in?
These are the Belmont Pacers.
What?
Yeah.
What?
The Kentucky Colonels. Or...
Okay, so this is the Kentucky Colonels. We split our games between Lexington and Louisville. This is the team I want to have. Reggie Miller, Allen Iverson.
You
I
have
don't know.
The opportunity to select one of the best
Wait,
players
is,
of all time.
This is at what year?
And
what
make
year
a shitload
Allen
of money.
I, what year is Allen
peak.
Iverson?
Everyone's
peak.
Peak.
Everyone's
okay, well,
peak.
I take Allen Iverson then. I take Allen
Iverson. All right. We got you. Oh, Matthew.
2001 Allen Iverson. A little better than 94 Reggie Miller.
Yeah, a little. Yeah. A little. Alright, so speaking of Vinny Del Negro and the mess that is the Clippers yet again.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, teams used to make trades for coaches.
Could you give some examples of that, John?
I know in the 70s, I can't actually give you great examples.
You have notes in front of you, John.
I have notes for this segment. Okay. Look it up on the internet, dear
teams
listener, dear humble listener.
Yes. Okay.
Teams would trade coaches. So, I currently don't understand why teams don't do this now instead of firing them and paying them still for and hiring a new coach and paying two coaches at the same time.
Yes.
So,
who was the last player coach?
Oh,
Lenny Wilkins.
Cowens maybe?
Paul Silas?
No,
now
Dave.
I'm confusing myself. Got
to have been Dave Cowens.
Magic Johnson. I'm joking.
I
don't know. That's why I asked.
But, so, for this next segment, I would like to suggest coaches trades for teams whose offense is woefully misguided from their personnel.
Okay. I'm ready.
So, granted, I made this 10 days ago before a shitload of coaches got fired.
So you can have him for free now.
So you can.
But it's still theoretical. Would you give up this player for this human being coaching, right?
Yes. All right, the Warriors.
Okay.
The Warriors. Up-tempo team.
Yeah.
A lot of fast personnel, short on defense.
Sure.
The Knicks. Front court loaded. Playing a fast-paced, high-octane, back-and-forth game when they have the personnel for more half-court. More of a half-court offense. Would you have done this trade before Mike D'Antoni resigned? D'Antoni for Mark Jackson.
I would fire either of them if they were my coach.
Mark Jackson.
I mean, I'd rather have D'Antoni.
I'm disappointed by what he thinks he can do with the Warriors, making them a defense first team.
Which is silly.
I don't doubt that he has the capability with the right personnel.
This is a really apt comparison because both these coaches will choose their philosophy over their personnel.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that
which is a fundamental flaw unless you're Tom Thibodeau, who can mold anyone into a defensive mastermind.
An immediate sign of a bad coach is a coach who thinks that his philosophy is more important than the personnel that he has. Jackson comes in and says, oh, we're going to be a defensive-oriented team when his two best players are Monta Ellis and Stephen Curry. I mean, that was a red flag.
And D'Antoni runs a point guard-centric offense that starts with Chris Duhon, like, his first year. Like, correct?
Yes.
They're both flawed. I mean, it should happen. If I had to pick one side or the other, I really don't want either of those people coaching my team.
Can you think of any different coaches that would be better?
I guess, for that trade, that trade makes some sense, and that Mark Jackson, you know.
It does, but I think we've seen with New York lately, I mean, their roster is just kind of broken, and I'm not sure if Mark Jackson... I mean, no one's going to get Amari Stoudemire to play defense. Nobody's going to get Jeremy Lin to play defense. I mean, at least on an effective level. I think Jackson would fail in New York. I think he would fail almost every place he went. And D'Antoni, would he make the Warriors a better team? Yes, he would.
Make them exciting to watch? Yes, he would. They'll obviously lose in the playoffs.
Yes, but they would make the playoffs. Yeah. If they were healthy and if they were not tanking the season.
Playing a 7-man rotation into the ground, yes.
Right. And then, yeah, I guess. I mean, and if they still have Monta Ellis, that would be interesting. And if Steph Curry were healthy, it'd be interesting.
Right. Who is the ideal coach for the Knicks? Who would you say?
Jeff Van Gundy.
Jeff Van Gundy.
I mean,
his offense kind of sucks. I mean, I don't know how you can have one of the best offensive centers in a long time in Yao Ming and have him run pick and rolls out near the 3-point line.
The Rockets did much better with Rick Adelman than Jeff Van Gundy.
That's also true. Rick Adelman's going to be my answer to a lot of those hypotheticals.
I mean,
or Greg Popovich is going to be the answer to a lot of these, or Tom Thibodeau.
I don't know what to make of the Knicks. I mean, they are an up-tempo team with their personnel, aren't they? I mean,
they have a great front court. Well, not a great front court, but a very good front court. And I don't know why they aren't running pick and rolls with Amare and Melo. That would just devastate people. More post-up plays with Melo. An unstoppable post player. Jeremy Lin can spot up and shoot threes all day with the right passing. Thibodeau would make a great coach.
Yeah. I mean, good coaches are kind of good coaches.
Good coaches are good coaches.
Who you got next?
Okay. Speaking of Del Negro, obviously a shitty coach with great personnel, unable to mold any sort of offensive plan to his personnel.
Sure.
Recently departed coach Nate McMillan.
Oh, well,
do you make the Clippers, Portland, Nate McMillan for Vinny Del Negro trade?
I would pick you over Vinny Del Negro. And Nate McMillan, as far as I know, has a better NBA career than you and more coaching experience.
Well, yeah, there you go.
I mean, Vinny Del Negro shouldn't have a job in any coaching capacity for any team on any level whatsoever.
I always thought Nate McMillan was a good coach.
Yeah,
very, very good coach. Oh, always overachieved.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
If he ended up in somewhere like Detroit, I think that would be good. I mean, some middling franchise, I mean, that he could help turn around over a few years. The new Sonics, if that ever existed, it would be nice to see him back there.
I mean, he's played with a personnel. I mean, you know, it's not his fault. Brandon Roy or drafting Greg Oden. I mean, what would Portland get out of a Del Negro trade? I mean,
they're a middling franchise that will take wants to cut costs. So.
All right, well, what player? I mean, if the Clippers said, say, had to give up Chauncey Billups for Nate McMillan, who would make that deal?
That's a good question. That they should do that. They should trade players for valuable coaches.
They did. The 70s. I wish I had specific examples, but that happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I were the Clippers, I would give up Billups. Definitely. I would maybe even give up someone more than that to get a coach.
To get a real coach.
I mean, with Nate McMillan sitting
the
out there, they can just
Blake
pick him up now.
Griffin and Chris Paul, maybe what they need most right now is a real coach. Or at least a coach that doesn't lose the team. I mean...
Yeah.
Actually, seriously, I mean, why aren't the Clippers, like, right now firing Vinny Del Negro as we speak?
It could be.
And hiring Nate McMillan.
I haven't checked the internet a little bit. It could be happening right now. I think that's really plausible. Who you got next on your list?
Okay. Lakers have been soaring as of lately. The Ramon Sessions trade, as much as I don't want to admit, is working out pretty well for
them.
Yes,
well,
the world was waiting to see Ramon Sessions.
Yeah, it's been a week. Everything's solved. Ramon Sessions to the
cold-bloodedly cut Derek Fisher, who's going to haunt them in the playoffs, even though he's...
Who did Derek... Has Derek Fisher signed
with him? Went to Oklahoma City.
Oh, good. Good for Derek Fisher.
Do you make this trade? Doc Rivers for Mike Brown. Lakers unable to capitalize on their dominant front court.
The Celtics would mutiny, I think.
Against Mike Brown, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think that's it. I mean, if they just give me a player for Doc Rivers, what could LA give up to
Powell.
The Celtics? And then Kevin Garnett's just the coach. You would give up Powell?
Oh, would...
You're the Lakers. You're trading for Doc Rivers. And his contract. Who would you give up? What's the biggest player you would give up for Doc Rivers?
Who's that?
Meta World Beast.
I think that's right. I think that's the exact trade. That makes sense from both sides.
We'll give you...
Who's that guy from the Pacers the Lakers now have?
All of
Josh
them?
McRoberts?
Josh McRoberts, yeah.
Yeah, you know, what a... You know, he looked pretty good in the series against the Bulls, but...
He's white. He'd fit in Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd fit in. He is an albatross.
The Celtics would not make that trade. They definitely would not. If you dangled our test, I think they would think about it. They have enough alpha personalities on that team where they could really... I mean, if we're throwing player coaches into this, too, because this is... A very sensical scenario we're throwing out.
Why
here.
Doesn't Meta World Peace become the player coach?
I think he is in his own brain.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. Who is a better coach for the Lakers at this point?
Rivers or I think Rivers would be a perfect coach in LA. I think that would really help him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kobe should become player coach.
Yeah, right. They'll teach them how to statutory rape people. Okay. All right. I will say this. Oklahoma City...
Okay.
...cannot score easy baskets.
Right.
Relies way too heavily on the 1-2 punch double dip of Durant, Westbrook. Would you make this... Which team does not make this trade? Oklahoma City, Scott Brooks, Minnesota Timberwolves... Rick Adelman.
Timberwolves.
Rick Adelman has been a savior for the Timberwolves franchise.
I mean, he walked into the Rick
Adelman. Yeah.
I mean, I think Scotty Brooks, if they don't make it to the finals this year, he's out. And I think that's... I mean, whatever. I'm not... He's done a really good job, but if you can't push him over that hump this year, then you got to move on, and you need to bring in someone like Rick Adelman.
or Greg Popovich, or Phil Jackson.
Phil Jackson in Oklahoma City, that'll blow my mind. But then they need to shift, and they need someone to sort of contain Westbrook and Durant, and that would run a structured offense, which is why I don't think
Phil Jackson would actually seriously be the right pick for Oklahoma City.
They could run the triangle, couldn't they?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Yeah, they have a lot of shooters.
They could run the triangle with Harden and Westbrook. And also, like, I mean, Jackson,
that team
like,
would win a lot of games.
That team would win a lot of games.
I mean, Jackson came in his first year as coach of the Lakers. They won 67 games and won the title with Jackson massaging Bryant and Shaq's egos at least for 3 years before things fell apart. I mean, if he can deal with Shaq and Kobe, you know,
well,
he
I
can
think
deal
it's also
if
he has
Brandon
the desire
Westbrook.
To do it anymore. And,
yeah,
and in Oklahoma City, I mean, you know. If he isn't going back to the Knicks,
well,
we're
I
never
going
to see Phil Jackson.
He's really, he likes pastoral and Native American situations. And
it's true. It harkens back to his roots of South Dakota. You know?
Yeah.
He could visit a lot of reservations while he's there.
Yeah.
Next.
That's it.
That's it? That's the list?
Do you think Scott Brooks is a good coach?
No.
I think he...
I think he's okay, but no, he's not... Offensively, they just have nothing going on.
If you have the Milwaukee Bucks right now, would you rather have Skiles or Scotty Brooks?
Scott Brooks
or Skiles, and you have the
that's
Bucks.
That's a good question. That's hard to answer.
Oh, actually,
yeah, I'd rather have Scotty Brooks.
I think I would too.
I mean, might take Scott. Oh no, Scott Skiles.
Can you win an NBA title with Scott Skiles as your coach?
No,
like if he were coach of Oklahoma City.
No, but he's great at turning around a team. I mean, if I have a team that's about to bottom out, like I don't know, Golden State or something like that, I would absolutely bring in Scott Skiles. And you keep Skiles for 3-4 years. I just think Scotty Brooks might be that kind of coach.
Okay.
It seems like. I mean, I'm not saying he is. They could obviously run the table this year and fucking dominate everybody and be like, well, Scotty Brooks, he's the best.
What about this?
Hmm.
Don Nelson for Scott Skiles.
Don Nelson.
Don Nelson like in an alley right now?
No, yeah. So Scott Skiles gets to go to Hawaii and do a bunch of cocaine while Don Nelson comes back.
I would like to see them as a team coaching.
Don Nelson right now is either really fat or really skinny. We don't
also
know
at the Chris Mullen retirement.
Oh, he was at the Chris
Mullen. Of course
did,
was he
was. Able to get some words in about
Oh,
Mullen?
Yeah, he got in on the play-by-play.
He's got a lot to say.
He got a lot to say. Talked about, you know, getting Chris Mullen out of alcoholism.
it was an important time.
Don Nelson was a great coach for Chris Mullen.
Anyway, very huge piece of news. Ben Gordon,
45 points.
45 points in another losing effort.
I mean, what do you think?
But if
it
were
ride motorcycles.
If it were 6 years ago, he would have made that shot.
Top five. I mean, we'll go five-ish. I have a bonus pick, I think. But these are our top most notable jersey retirement ceremonies of all time.
These aren't the most interesting jersey retirement, but this is the actual evening where they get their jersey retired you're
sure.
talking about.
I mean, well, you can fudge a little bit. I'm going to start with number five. This is just kind of notable in some reason. Number five, my choice that I'm taking. In this draft.
This is your fifth best?
Well, I have five. Matthew has four. You have three. So start thinking.
Okay. You're asking me to come up with four individual
No, you are... All right, this is a top five. So I'm taking the fifth pick. You will have the fourth.
Oh.
It's just like what they do in the NBA.
Okay.
I got nervous there.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry if that was confusing.
No, it's fine.
Number five, I will take Bruce Bowen.
He got his jersey.
He got his fucking jersey retired. That ball kicker. That fucking ankle breaker piece of shit.
He got his jersey retired. retired.
Bruce Bowen's jersey is retired.
Oh, I'm going to get my jersey retired by jumping under every jump shooter in the fucking world and breaking their ankle.
Steve Nash. How can someone whose career is defined by injuring Steve Nash get his jersey retired?
Because Popovich says that he deserved to have his jersey retired. And at his ceremony was everyone on the Spurs who has started or won a championship. He wore a bow tie. He went to each of them and is like, there's a lot of numbers we got to put up here. I'm not going to be able to remember everyone's jersey, but he would point at Manu and be like, there needs to be a 12 up there. Or whoever's 12. I don't even know. What's Duncan's number?
21.
21. Yeah, there needs to be 21. A 21. Luke Longley was not in attendance, but...
Luke Longley played for the Spurs?
Yeah, it's who the Bulls trade him to, correct?
Oh, yeah.
You're thinking of Will Perdue.
No, Will Perdue.
Oh,
Will
you're
Perdue,
right. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm getting them confused. I think I can be forgiven.
Was Will Perdue in the 99 Spurs?
If for Rodman, yeah. No, I don't know if he was on the 99 Spurs, but he got traded for Rodman. Right. Anyway, yes. Continue.
Will Perdue, largest shoes in the history of the NBA.
Yeah, he has such big... So there's this thing at the United Center where they like, how big are your shoes? And they have like, the biggest shoe is like Shaq, 22 Triple E.
You should have to compare your dick size with Perdue.
That's in a different part. That's not in public. That's in the
Bulls home locker. They don't have that, apparently. Just shoes and jerseys.
But I think it would be better to retire Will Perdue's shoes than it would be to retire Bruce Bowen's number. And this has set a precedent where the Spurs have to retire everyone's number now ever, which is ridiculous.
Bruce Bowen, what was like the peak, if you're like ranking the Spurs players, what was the peak that Bowen would have been? Was he like the fifth best player 1 year? The fourth best player 1 year?
Oh. Sure-ish.
Not even...
Maybe?
No, because Manu, he was still starting over Manu, so he wasn't like...
What's like our vintage Bruce Bowen year? Like, what's Bowen was tearing it up that year. Like,
he undercut Chauncey Billups in the finals? In
2005.
Yes.
Was 2005 the best Bowen year?
Sure.
Over Robert Horry? Can this man get a fucking break?
And Sean Elliott, who still does not.
Sean Elliott doesn't have his Spurs number retired, and Bruce Bowen does.
You know what? I gotta say, I didn't check.
Sean Elliott has been through many. Sorry, I'm riled up. Sean Elliott was through many iterations of the Spurs.
I will look up the Sean Elliott facts later and get back to you.
Guy has a kidney infection. Probably Bruce Bowen gave him the kidney infection.
My favorite Bruce Bowen story is when they put him on the Redeem Team, I believe.
Oh.
They did?
Jesus. They should revoke his jersey number for
they
that.
Put him on the Redeem Team, and he was seen at the casinos and the tryouts in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Every other player was hanging out together, laughing, having fun at the casino. And you could see Bruce Bowen alone at the blackjack table because no one liked him because he was a dirty fucking player.
And Tim Duncan then tossed him. He taught him how to love. And now they love him. Matthew, number four, your choice.
I'm so upset with the Spurs right now.
John, number four, your choice.
Because this is a draft.
Yes.
Okay, so this isn't... Okay.
I don't know.
This isn't a counting on top moments. I will go with the best jersey retirement of all time being Michael Jordan's jersey retirement at Miami.
And in Pat Riley's final year, the first jersey to ever be hung up. What year was it? 2003?
I believe so. It had at least a year after Jordan retired for the second time.
I cannot confirm this, but there was a... Do you remember the ceremony? Because I think the jersey was half blue, wizard blue and half bull red when they put it up. Now it's all bull red.
Oh.
For sure. But I think the initial one was a split jersey.
Blasphemy.
And this was Pat Riley's choice. Riley's final year coaching. He was like, we will retire Michael Jordan's jersey here.
Well, he's always been very ingenious in his... mind game moves.
Yes. All right. The Heat have three other jerseys in their Raptors. That was the first in 2003.
So the first... Let's make this clear for the viewers out there. The first jersey the Miami... People love to watch this. The first jersey the Miami Heat ever retired was of
Michael Jordan,
a player who never played for the Miami Heat.
Yes, which is another reason. I mean, this is the whole thing. This is about how the Heat are the worst things that have ever happened ever. They're just a plague on us. They're the locust of bass. They should be the Miami locust.
That would be a good
then, name. In 2006, they raised another jersey to the rafters, but did not retire it.
They didn't retire it.
What? It raised into the rafters in 2006. I will give you.
They literally just raised the jersey.
They raised the jersey and honored this person.
32, Harold Miner.
Incorrect. Here's what else I'm going to tell you. It was not a basketball player.
Oh. Dan Marino?
Correct! Dan Marino, number
13! How did you retire a non-basketball jersey?
It wasn't a basketball jersey either. They put up the football jersey.
Wow. Wow. Oh, doesn't the owner own more than just the Heat?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't think so.
No Mickey idea. Harrison, I don't think he owns... I think the Marlins owner also owns the Dolphins.
The Dolphins are owned in somewhat by Gloria Estefan.
Oh, really? Why don't they retire her jersey?
I agree, they might. So, 3 years later, after this was a complete embarrassment, in 2009...
So, Michael Jordan and Dan Marino.
And Dan Marino in the rafters.
Okay.
And then in 2009, they retired two players' jerseys very quickly, because this was kind of an embarrassment.
Okay.
And by kind of, I mean it was a crime against everything.
Sure.
They retired two players' jerseys. Guess who?
And these were actually
Ronnie Cycli.
Former
Ronnie Cycli is incorrect, which I thought was right.
And oh wow!
Ronnie Cycli is not retired.
So
he's DJing right now.
Yeah, well, he's in the right place.
Did you know Ronnie Cycli's nickname?
DJ.
No, not his DJ nickname.
DJ Psych.
I did not know that Ronnie Cycli had a nickname.
You just got psyched.
And I was doing a little research. His nickname was the Spin Doctor.
Oh.
If
you want to call me Cycli,
that's really good.
Just do it.
Yeah, you can listen. We're going to play a little bit of DJ Ronnie Cycli after this segment to listen.
You've
to
just got psyched.
His DJ name? DJ Ronnie Cycli.
What kind of what kind of like music does Ronnie Cycli?
Eurodance?
Oh, Eurodance. early aughts house. You know, a lot of grime.
Grime.
No, yeah. Dubstep.
He was one of the first former NBA centers to get into dubstep.
But his Cycli's jersey has been retired by the Syracuse Orangemen. But, so the Heat, two players since 2009.
These are actual former Heat.
These are players that actually played on the Heat.
Alonzo Mourning and Tim Hardaway.
That's exactly right.
Oh, yeah.
Which still makes me feel gross. Well,
you know... God hates fags. Tim Hardaway.
So
Tim Hardaway's in the clear here. You know.
He's obviously not a big fan of University of Michigan either. Matthew? Number three.
I guess, did the Timberwolves already retire someone's jersey?
They should retire KG's.
They should retire Kevin McHale's jersey.
I don't know. I'm going to have to go with... I don't mean to darken the mood, but this is the only jersey retirement I can think of right now. 1995, the Boston Celtics retired Reggie Lewis's jersey. Reggie Lewis had collapsed on the court in 1993.
It took a while for that to happen, yeah.
And then 2 years later, they retired his jersey. Reggie Lewis, if you weren't aware, was like 26 when he died. He was a very good player with the Celtics, all-star player. Looked like he was going to have a long and great career.
Did they give Len Bias a number?
Guard. They gave him.
Is
I don't,
Terrapin's
I,
number?
I don't think so.
Is I'm Len Bias' sure. jersey retired? And who
Len
else
Bias's
has worn
jersey
it?
Retired. No. Len Bias' jersey is retired at the University of Maryland.
Okay. What number?
33, I think.
Really?
32 or 33.
Oh, well, if he was 33, I obviously would have had to change it.
Yeah.
Is Pierce running around in Len Bias' jersey number? Because that seems like bad luck.
32?
It seems like that would be something that you stab multiple times. It was a terrible joke.
Okay.
Anyway, so the Reggie Lewis thing, I was just going to briefly say regarding his jersey retirement. So he gets his jersey retired in March 95. 2 days before that, the Wall Street Journal does a front page story about Reggie Lewis collapsing, saying that Reggie Lewis had cocaine in his system right before he died. And the Celtics furiously denied this, and I believe Reggie Lewis's widow filed a lawsuit against the Wall Street Journal, but his retirement ceremony was marred by that. Also, the Wall Street Journal article was written by Ron Suskind, who like later went on to be a big political writer.
Good choice, Matthew.
I will say one last note about Lewis. If you go to the Blacks and Wax Museum,
right,
in Baltimore, he is memorialized there with his own wax sculpture statue.
Dunbar High School.
Is he standing up?
Dunbar High School.
Oh, in Baltimore.
Yeah. Is he playing basketball? Is
He's standing up. He's standing up with some other people from the 90s that were notable that I can't remember right now.
All right. For number two, I'm taking what happened a week ago. I'm taking the Chris Mullin retirement.
Mm.
John, you witnessed this, I assume?
Bravo. I did not, because NBA League Pass had technical difficulties during the halftime.
Ah, that's shocking. if you aren't aware of this, Chris Mullin had his jersey retired. This was right after they traded Monta Ellis for
a player who can't physically play.
That's correct. And he's Australian, so neither of these are good things. Fans are upset. Fans are pissed. And during Mullen's retirement ceremony, they booed incessantly to the point where Chris Mullin had to stop the owner from introducing him. Went up, talked a little bit. The boos continued. And then Rick Barry came out
and said they should all be ashamed of themselves.
That's exactly what he did. And Rick while Barry, he was doing that, Kevin
Love,
the
biggest asshole in NBA history.
Kevin Love sitting, Rick Barry, the biggest fuckface ever, telling people to show some respect.
Nobody was a bigger dickhead than Rick Barry.
Kevin Love is, because these take a long time, as you know, from having the game blocked out for so long, that Kevin Love is, all of the Timberwolves are just standing, waiting to get back on the court. Kevin Love is just cracking up the entire time.
So what initiated the boos? Just the presence
just
the of
the mere
owner?
Presence yes. of the owner.
Exactly.
Who spoke, who had the nerve to speak last?
I think it might have just ended. It might have ended after Barry. Maybe Mullin came back up?
No, he spoke after Chris Mullin.
So Mullin spoke, and then the owner spoke, and they serenaded the owner with booze.
Almost. Owner tried to introduce him. And Chris Mullin essentially came up and took the mic, like when Doc Rivers helped that little girl sing the national
Mo
anthem.
Cheeks.
Mo Cheeks, I'm sorry. And just kind of had to...
His greatest career achievement.
It is. It's a good one. It's another reason Mo Cheeks should be in the Hall of Fame. And is better than Reggie Miller.
Oh, come on! No, you can't!
Do we have anything else to say about fans booing during retirement ceremonies?
I
just wanted
yes.
that to cover
well,
that.
Well, I just want to make one last note about that. Chris Mullin's number went up next to Wilt Chamberlain's. Because the Philadelphia Warriors moved to San Francisco.
And everyone loves Chamberlain's years with the Warriors.
Yeah.
Fondly remembered by many women.
So is Mullin, Barry, and Chamberlain, are those the Warriors with their numbers retired? Do we have other Warriors?
Billy Owens.
Okay.
Chris Webber.
Definitely.
Chris Webber.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I'm not
Danielle
sure.
Danielle Marshall.
Latrell Sprewell.
Oh, God, I wish he'd get his jersey retired. Big
I would
fan.
Like, I mean, there's probably somebody that had their jersey dishonorably retired. Maybe not in a professional sport, but that seems like a minor league baseball team gimmick where they would, like, retire, like, one of the worst players ever jersey. That must have happened. We'll look into this in part two. next segment, next time on our jersey retirement.
The Clippers should retire Michael Olowokandi's jersey.
I think that would be a good idea. I have one more thing in mind. Do you have another one, John?
No.
Okay. My last one is not even a... well, hold on one second.
Move. Dance. from 4 a.m. because that's how we live at fucking South Beach. So no one's going anywhere. Friday night, 36th House. That's the name of the party. And that's how we do it.
My last one is not a retirement. Well, it was Johnny Red Kurt night at the United Center,
yeah.
which I attended. I don't remember who they played that night. But it was, I mean, Michael was there. Scotty was there. Red Kurt was there.
Oh, they played the Lakers.
Oh, there you go.
And Phil Jackson said something.
Was awesome. It was so good. I mean, Red Kurt was holding that chair, and they had to, like, move him around.
Yeah, they had to move the date up because he was dying.
Right. That's exactly right. And, it was Obama gave a speech over a video, and it was really long. Colangelo, Jerry Colangelo,
Jerry,
talked for a long time and talked about how Red Kerr taught him how to love or something like that as well. It was actually a little creepy. Some old white guy who like talked about how he didn't know how to talk.
Norm Van Leer. Oh, Bob Love.
No, I have no idea. He was like a guy that used to work in the Bulls front office in the 60s.
Oh.
It was star-studded. But Norm Van Leer is also who I want to talk about because, I mean, this is somewhat rumored. Norm Van Leer did attend. It was initially rumored that he had to buy his own ticket because he was not on good terms with the Bulls at that point. A lot of it because he criticized Scott Skiles. Well, I mean, he criticized the Bulls a lot, but he...
So who is Norm Van Leer?
Norm Van Leer is a three-time All-Star who is an icon of 70s basketball, especially in Chicago.
Playing with the backcourt with Jerry Sloan?
Exactly.
Right, played Van Leer-Sloan backcourt.
Right.
Your balls were not safe.
Exactly. They were the most physical backcourt that might have ever played, ever. I mean, because you could get away with a lot of things then. And seeing that, I think of a parallel of Red Kerr and Norm Van Leer is interesting. Anyway... came up with Cincinnati and averaged a double-double, a 16-10 in his second year with Cincinnati. And then played with the Bulls, started the All-Star game in 1978, which is amazing, and was like a dancer on the court. A small dude who played much bigger than he is, and very outspoken, and criticized, well, first Tabo Cephalosha, who said that he was intimidated by Scott Skiles, is coaching, and it affected his play. And Norm Van Leer said that he would sooner fight Scott Skiles or any coach than be intimidated by a coach.
Wait, who is intimidated by it?
Tabo Cephalosha.
So wait, Tabo Cephalosha told the media, "I am intimidated by my coach."
Pretty much, he said that Skiles was intimidating him and affecting his play. This is, I think, the same season he got the tattoo that says, "The game chose me," chose with a Z. With a basketball. I think this was the same season. But he said that the Bulls team had a heart the size of a mustard seed.
Oh, wow.
And was
really small.
It's really small. And he was on bad terms with some of the people in the Bulls and was not really invited to many things. And there was a rumor that he wasn't invited to this, had to buy his own seat. And... then they were like, well, shit, if you're going to be here, we can't. Just come sit with everybody. All right, fine, you're here. And Norm Van Leer was quite young, 61 at the time. I mean, Johnny Kerr was old, and yeah, they pushed it up because he was dying. And 16 days later, Norm Van Leer died. He was found in his apartment right near the United Center. I think he was... he lived by himself and was kind of a shut-in, and people didn't talk to Norm very much at the end. And he was really gracious to go out and, like, do things, but he had burned a lot of bridges and was a very abrasive human being because he would fight anyone to be Norm Van Leer. And he was found dead, and there's never really been a cause of death reported. His wife, or I don't know, woman person, I don't know how attached they were at this point, when asked about his death, said, "Yeah, a lot of people are surprised, but I'm not surprised by it at all." And anyone in his family also wouldn't be surprised by it. It's somewhat, it's speculated that Norm Van Leer killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty much told by the Bulls, there will never be Norm Van Leer tonight.
Damn.
And
Sloan's got his jersey. Sloan's got his number up there.
And
damn.
Norm, yeah, he took it kind of hard and was found just, his heart stopped beating, is the report. And while they started running a Norm Van Leer tribute on Comcast that night, and while they were running it, across the ticker came across the news that Red Curra died. And yeah.
Wow.
Sad.
So that's
one last note to make. Not to speak ill of the dead, but my brother's friends who do the Comcast Sports Network show for yeah. the Bulls. He said that Norm Van Leer was drunk every show.
Oh yeah, Norm Van Leer really liked to drink.
Was a drunk every show.
Yes. There will be, during our segues in here, I'm going to splice in some audio of Norm Van Leer doing some interviews, especially the one which was pretty recent where this happened in 2009, by the way, and I believe it was that season. He was commandeered to be the judge of who would not be the Lovables that year.
Oh,
and he talks a lot about dancing, and he's a little inebriated. But, yeah, Norm Van Leer was just such a throwback in that, unlike today's players, where he never felt victimized by the media, and he would talk. If you asked him a dumb, stupid fucking question, he would still turn it around and make it an entertaining answer, and he would still individualize it and say something about it. And that is a variety of athlete that we essentially don't have. I mean, the closest thing we had was maybe Gilbert Arenas, and like that sailed. And
Barkley,
but he's not playing. So.
Yeah, he's not playing.
It's quite a day.
Storm and Norman Van Leer, you're a judge for the Lovables competition.
I am that.
How does that work?
You look at them, you watch them dance.
No, I mean, how'd you get the job, first of all? Who called you?
Kathy called me. I was just at home one day at the apartment, and she said, would you like to judge, the new Lovables coming in?
Right.
And I went, yeah.
Why would you ever say no to that, Norm?
Yeah, tell me about it. Yeah. But I had to check the schedule, see if I was in town, and been going back to Pittsburgh a lot, see my mom, so it was open, and I'm here, and I'm having a good time. It's the first time I've judged something like that.
Well, you got 200 hot chicks in front of you, and you're checking things out.
Look, I always in my life, and I regret this. There's one thing I regret in life.
Okay.
Growing up in Pittsburgh, I wanted to be a dancer. I wanted to dance. I saw Fred
Astaire. Are you kidding me?
I saw Eddie Cantor and Fred Astaire, and these people dancing, and I said, man, I like to do that. But I just thought, growing up in the 60s, men just don't do that. I wasn't going to wear the tights and stuff. Look, it took me a long time when I was a kid in high school to wear those tight shorts to go on the basketball court. I was afraid of that. But honestly, I
wanted to
dance.
Which was a terrible look, by the way.
I think tell me about it.
Yeah.
They're like tight underwear. But I think that's a great art. To perform and do those things. And the kids tease me right now. I'm always telling them to go out and do something. My young girls that grew up. And that's one thing I regret in life. I didn't pursue dancing. I just didn't like to sweat when I danced in the like faces way back when I grew up.
Right.
So my dance was like about like this, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But one thing I just jump off this banister and I try to do like the cat. You know, when you jump, you land, no sound. You know, I was cool.
Really?
Oh, I was cool. You know, you come off that banister, you're dancing, you're doing your thing, you're moving those feet, you're doing this stuff. Then when you jump off, you go, hey, I could have played the Black Cat Man on Batman. Tell me.
The Black Cat Man.
What about our rock and roll days, man? Huh?
How about this outfit? Where do I pick that up, man? The yellow hat, the Hawaiian shirt, and the suspenders. Where do I get that, Norm?
This is a Mick Jagger type outfit. You know, when he's doing his thing. Hey, you're rocking and rolling. I have this thing about the tight belt in the summer. I want to be loose, you know, just suspendies and everything.
You never know when you have to take off your pants, am I right?
You never know when you have to unsnap.
Tell me what you're looking for in the competition. You're a judge, and you have to take this seriously.
The dance is the most important part.
Right.
But also, you like to dip a little bit into the personalities. And I think that is one of the... the things you have to deal with. I think Kathy digs a little deeper than what you get a chance to do. Like, you see all of everybody dancing, but you don't get to feel the personality unless they get out and speak personally. I think the personality is the most important thing. If you can dance, you can dance.
Can you tell right away when a girl walks up if she's got it or not?
But you can tell when they come out. Once again, the dancing is the easiest part of dealing with it. Just like if you're a basketball player, you watch someone play ball, oh, he's good.
Right.
Now, do you want to sacrifice? Do you want to play team ball? Do you want to do the other things, the intangibles that go along with making you a great basketball player? There's a lot of talent out there, but not everybody wants to work and do what you need to do. And you can tell with a dancer, dance, hey, you can dance, but you really want to do this. Or you just showtime. Or do you want free tickets to the Bulls game?
Matthew and John, it's about that time. Say goodbye.
Oh, to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank everyone for listening. Oh, do we have a listener of the week?
Oh, right, listener of the week. Do you? Has anyone told you they actually listen to this podcast, John?
Yeah, we tend to...
No. I would say the listener of the week would be the one person to ever listen to any of these shows.
Oh, who is that? I mean, Matthew.
I would like to know.
Has anyone listened since we've last done listener of the segment?
Oh, actually...
Oh!
Not to make this show increasingly about David Gleicher, but I think David Gleicher was our listener of the week a few weeks ago.
He was.
And
we can have a listener of the week update segment. No. Simply about David Gleicher.
Here's a brief listener of the week
update. How did his Magic tournament go?
He's in Mexico City right now.
Oh my goodness.
Magic the card game?
Oh yes.
Magic the Gathering card
game.
Oh
wow.
So
is he clutch?
Well, that's what I'm getting to. So during our listener of the week segment, Chris and I inaccurately stated the listener of the week, David Gleicher, played on the national Magic the Gathering circuit, but was not a nationally ranked Magic
the Gathering
player.
You said he wasn't ranked. I thought he was ranked. What's his rank?
I said
What's
he
his
was
rank?
Ranked. David corrected me after listening to our podcast, and David said that he was ranked in some like special fantasy dwarf whatever division, and
yes,
he was ranked like 40th or 50th in
40th
that,
or 50th
in that particular division.
Oh, okay.
That's pretty good.
So he is a nationally ranked Magic.
Who would you
Gathering
say is the 40th or 50th best player in the NBA right now? They had to have played a while, because he's played a while of Magic.
The 40th or 50th best player in the NBA right now is probably
Joe Johnson.
Joe Johnson's better than that. Tyson Chandler.
David Gleicher, you're the Tyson Chandler of this podcast and the most famous Magic player that listens.
Also, Lee Fiorio keeps complaining about our website.
We've already...
Fuck you, Lee Fiorio. Who's that? I don't even know.
He doesn't know how to click on things. All right. I think heading out here, I'm going to play one of my favorite Red Kerr segments, which was when the Bulls were playing the Pacers and Danny Granger brought it to the half. And the Bulls were not performing.
Danny Granger's been playing very well lately, by the way.
Fuck you.
Oh, fuck Danny
you.
Granger. Fuck Danny Granger.
Oh, come on.
Oh, Danny Granger's so good. Danny Granger's so good. Oh, the Pacers are so good. The Pacers are bottoming out. No one gives a shit about the Pacers.
The Pacers are bottoming out.
No one gives...
Pacers are a matchup nightmare for the Bulls.
Yeah, right.
I remember
that's
last
That's why
year.
They're fucking not excelling anymore. Same for the Sixers. Bullshit them.
Actually, the Sixers could fall apart. This is a Doug
they
Collins.
They are falling apart.
This is a Doug Collins coach.
Evan
team.
Turner can't just turn that team around again.
They can
Drew.
Miss the playoffs entirely.
Wow.
The Bucks and wow. Knicks are surging.
Well, we should have played wow. the Doug Collins oh. coach game. Jesus
oh,
Christ.
So
that's Doug quite Collins.
Going against the fashionable picks that
yeah.
you made.
Well, let's just hope the Bulls don't end up facing the Bucks in the first round of the playoffs without Derrick Rose. Because my brand and gending feelings would be hurt having to cheer against them so much.
His groin can't be that bad.
I don't know. I don't think he knows. Skittles will have to heal.
Has your groin ever bled?
Yeah, on the inside?
The inside?
My groin is never internally bled.
You don't know what he's going through.
All right, well, I'm taking you out with Red Kerr for the halftime of a Pacers-Bulls game where the Bulls were playing shittily against a shitty Pacers team. Where he is just going to drop the mic before halftime and storm off. And I think we might also feature a little Stacey King in there, because this is where you get all your Stacey King news.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Granger. Granger.
We just lost Granger.
Granger, top of the circle.
Ran down. Ran's down.
Ball tapped away. Out of bounds. The half over.
Oh,
57-56. Pacers with a lead.
Right away. The first time they got their butts kicked by Boston, I see right there, this team's not even trying. That was, the second game of the season? They lost New Jersey, blew 18-point game, point lead to this team. The team lost control right there. Then the rumors start with Kobe right there. They're not strong enough mentally to do what they have to do, and I have to blame that on the players right there, not coaches at this particular time. So if you can't coach that, run the team and do what's going on. First of all, Chris Duhon, if I'm running the team, he'd have been put on waivers, but there, Duke, for me. You know what? You give me an answer like that, bye. See you. Maybe I would have waited until we got on the airplane and did it. So I can understand and let everybody else know I mean business about running this team and playing basketball. You're paid to do that. This team is gone shot, and I'm telling you right now, weak mentally to do what you have to do. This is the third, fourth years with some of these guys. I don't buy that excuse. I don't want to hear that excuse. So right now, you got to regroup, and I think Pac's got a hell of a job on his hands to retool this team and get them back in order.